Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barra, and joining me is Brian.
Hello.
After a little bit of a hiatus because of
some
software and technology issues.
Yep.
We're back.
We are back.
Yes.
Finally.
And we are going to finish up our discussion on U.S. politics, or the stranger side of U.S. politics.
Yes.
The third part of the trilogy. Political parties.
Yeah. This is Return of the Jedi.
The best one.
Or Return of the King. Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that, but not really.
So,
we got political parties.
Yep.
First one is called the Raza Unida Party. Ever hear of them? Also known as...
I feel like I know the name, but I have no idea who they are.
They're also known as RUP.
Yeah, no, I've never heard of them.
They formed in Texas through a number of spontaneous grassroots political organizations. While nobody knows exactly when and where the party started, RUP filed as a political party in several Texas counties in January 1970. RUP politicians wanted autonomy and nationalism for the Chicago population of Mexican Americans.
Wait, but they're in Texas.
Oh, Chicano population.
Oh, okay.
From Chicago.
Yeah, I thought that's what you said.
Inverse.
Like, what?
I can't read. Chicano population.
All right.
That is the Mexican population of Texas.
Okay.
So that makes a lot more sense.
Not Chicago. Got it.
Never mind. Chicago has a very large Mexican population.
All right.
I think it's one of the larger Mexican American populations in the country.
Oh.
It's in Chicago. Yeah.
All right.
But Chicano, not Chicago. They weren't trying to create their own country in Chicago. But Texas, yes. Anybody could join the party regardless of ethnicity, but everyone was committed to the party goals of bilingual education, equal pay, more oversight over police forces, and increased self-determination for the Chicano population. Over time, RUP's goals drifted more towards revolutionary ideas.
Oh,
ooh, that ain't good.
Yeah.
With the influx of illegal immigrants, RUP representatives favored loose control and began to talk about communal living. Ooh, that's never good either. Yeah.
Yeah, last time that happened, Garfield got shot. So
yeah.
Go listen to our episode on that.
Although many Texans were not happy about RUP and opposed its ideals, many RUP candidates ran for political office during the 1972 state elections. Despite the initial excitement of RUP representation, no RUP candidates won their election. Undeterred, they ran for governor in 1974 and 78. However, the party was hurt by laws that required filing fees and by voter apathy towards RUP themselves. The excitement of 1972 died down quickly, and the 1978 race was RUP's last major political move. On a national scale, RUP remained relatively unknown, but its influence was big on younger Chicano activists, not Chicago activists.
Never mind.
Ooh, I like this one. The Anti-Nebraska Party.
Ooh, I can fully get behind that.
The Anti-Nebraska Party?
Yeah, sorry for anyone who's from Nebraska.
Any of our listeners from Nebraska?
Yeah.
I don't think we have many.
Yeah. There's just nothing there. Like,
there's corn.
I mean, yeah, but you can also get
some
that
wheat,
from like
Iowa.
Yeah.
So, Anti-Nebraska Party. 1854, U.S. created the new territories of Kansas and Nebraska, expanding slavery into these areas in a shocking reversal of earlier decisions. Instantly, this energized the country into taking sides in a new anti-slavery debate. With the Whig Party rapidly disintegrating, it was obvious that the Southern-influenced Democrats held nearly unlimited control of the U.S. government, which allowed slavery to expand into new territories. At first, the anti-Nebraska activists formed a loose coalition that united over disagreement with the Kansas-Nebraska Act. Eventually, politicians, including a young Abraham Lincoln, realized that they would need to organize into a political party to have any say on the national level. To do this, they began to hold debates and publish tracts about the need to oppose the Kansas-Nebraska Act. Taking advantage of the power vacuum left by the Whig Party, the Anti-Nebraska Act embarked on a campaign to bring as many Whigs to their side as possible. They also made appeal to Northern Democrats who opposed slavery but were uncomfortable with the federal government. With these groups coalescing, the Anti-Nebraska Party combined with the Free Soil Party, another third party whose only platform was to stop the spread of slavery. Together, they became the chief opponents of Democrats on the local level and eventually will become the Republican Party.
So Abe Lincoln was an anti-Nebraska?
He was.
Wow. That's my president right there. Get rid of Nebraska. Just all together.
I don't say get rid of it. It's just, I don't know. It's just there. I don't
make
know.
Make it its own country, honestly.
I had a former student.
Export a ton of corn.
I had a former student from Nebraska, and he used to talk trash to me all the time. I think that's where my ill feelings came from.
I just think there's nothing there.
Well, that's true, but
Like, name a city in Nebraska.
Lincoln.
Other than Lincoln.
Hey, it's named after Abe.
Oh, it is. But he was anti-Nebraska.
That is true. Ooh, so, the irony.
Yeah.
Do you think they know that?
Probably not.
Okay. That's the only city I know. Yeah. Omaha?
Oh, that is in Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Or is that in Kansas?
I think it's in
No, yeah, it's Nebraska.
I think that's it.
Okay.
That's all I got.
So there's two cities in Nebraska.
Is there a Riley?
I have no idea.
There's Friendly, Nebraska.
That's a,
population like 85.
Huh. That's like the third largest city there.
All right, next
I'm
one
sorry
is.
Sorry for all the Nebraska hate.
Yes, Brian. Brian, you're not going to be allowed to go there anymore.
No, I'm banned from Nebraska now.
So you got the Liberal Party. When Mormon settlers founded Utah in the mid-1800s, they set up a governmental system focused on church authority. In the early settlements, religion and politics were intertwined, and there were few political contests about the laws and leaders of the territory. That began to change when William Godbey left the church in the 1860s. With Godbey and his followers establishing political opposition to the government of Brigham Young, territory faced political rivalry for the first time. Initially, this group was known as the Godbeyites. But they eventually renamed themselves the Liberal Party. I can't understand why they would rename themselves.
Yeah, Godbeyites is a really cool name, honestly.
The Godbeyites. All right.
Maybe not cool, but it's funnier than, yeah.
Their platforms were very anti-Mormon. I don't think that's going to fly over well, but mostly from a political and economic angle. Liberal Party members opposed the hegemony of the Brighamite government and wanted Utah to become more integrated with the American mainstream. By the time the Liberal Party officially organized, Utah politics had broken down along religious lines. Mormons supported the pro-Mormon People's Party. Everyone else sided with the Liberal Party. Liberal politicians always did poorly in state elections because Mormons far outnumbered non-Mormons in Utah. Notwithstanding their lack of electoral success, liberals were key to increasing the separation between Mormon leadership and territory politics. Still, party members declined rapidly as Utah approached statehood. When the U.S. added Utah as a state, the Liberal Party and People's Party survived for only a short while Mormon leaders encouraged members of the People's Party to join national parties to get Mormons more involved in national politics. Before they could make an impact on the national scene, the liberals followed suit and were absorbed into the national Democratic and Republican parties. I wonder how much of that had to do with the whole army invasion of Utah.
The what?
Never heard about that?
No.
Happened in like the 1840s, 1850s. It's right before the Civil War. And basically, Utah said, we don't have to pay taxes.
Huh.
And they said, because we're a church.
The entire state of
yes.
Utah is a church.
Basically, that was their argument. And then the army said, or the government said, no, you do have to pay taxes. And they said, no, we don't. So then we sent the army there. And then they got halfway there. And guess what happened?
They died in the Rockies?
No, they started paying taxes.
Oh.
Yeah, because we were about to take the army was about to take them over.
I thought you were talking about the army, not the Utah.
Oh, no. No, they didn't go through the Donner Pass.
All right.
Which was in the news this week, but.
Oh, really?
There was a massive snowstorm up there, like record levels, and all these like people got stranded up on Donner Pass.
Huh. Do you think they're going to start eating each other?
I hope not. I think they were rescued, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, modern technology allowed that, but
yeah,
it could have been Donner Party Part 2. Home Rule Party of Hawaii, another local third party organized with the goal of representing Hawaiian concerns more effectively on a national scale. In the early 1900s, the Hawaiian people not believed that the National Democratic or Republican parties represented them. Robert William Wilcox, a Hawaiian politician, led the organization of the Home Rule Party to offer an alternative for Hawaiian voters. Wilcox led the Home Rule Party in a strict nationalistic platform. During their first election, the party won basically some seats in the territorial government. Soon, though, the U.S. decided to give Hawaii one non-voting representative in the U.S. of House of Representatives.
Oh, like what D.C. has, kind of?
Yep, or like Guam or Puerto Rico. 1901, Wilcox won election as a delegate and went to D.C. to represent the island chain. In the House of Representatives, Wilcox had little influence on his fellow politicians. As a third-party delegate, his role in crafting legislation was limited, and his difficulty with speaking English complicated his problems. Yeah.
Yeah.
His lack of results in Washington made the Hawaiian people skeptical about the Home Rule Party, causing the party to suffer crushing electoral defeats in 1902. 1903, Wilcox died of brain hemorrhages. Oh. By 1912, the party was gone.
All right. That's kind of sad.
That's a argument that a lot of territories have is like, sure, you give us like a seat in the House of Representatives, but we don't have any voting power whatsoever. So literally we're just
sitting there.
We're just sitting there. We're
talking to everyone else.
Yeah, we're just observance because we have no political power whatsoever. All right. Next party, known as the CFP. Any guesses what CFP stands for?
California Freedom Party?
No.
I'm thinking it's like a state. Maybe it's Connecticut.
Christian Freedom Party.
Oh.
Was the brainchild.
Close.
Was the
with the last two words, not the first one.
Was the brainchild of politician Thomas Herons, who became dissatisfied with traditional political parties in 2004. He felt that progressive moderate Christians were not properly represented in the United States. According to Herons, the Republicans have moved toward a version of Christianity that was too extreme for his taste, and the Democrats spent too much time vilifying good Christians. A key aspect of the CFP was contained in Herons' statements that belief in God should transcend politics and that good Christians should support godly policies regardless of their political leanings. With that in mind, CFP held many mismatched positions. They believed in universal health care, but wanted to ban abortions. They favored small government, but still believed in strict environmental protection and the government's participation in finding a cure for AIDS. During the 2004 election, some political commentators felt that Herons was attempting to pull votes away from George Bush to ensure a John Kerry victory. Unfortunately, Herons barely made a dent with his party. However, he felt that any votes for the CFP would give people a chance to talk about his policies, which became his measure of success. Nobody talked about his policies, and the CFP soon fell apart.
So basically, he wants to mix church and state.
Yes.
Okay.
But once again, his policies are contradictory of each other.
Yeah.
He doesn't like big government, but he wants the EPA to basically destroy things to save the environment.
Maybe he saw the Simpsons movie and really liked it.
I saw that and I don't really remember it.
Oh, have you read Under the Dome by Stephen King? Because it's basically that.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I have not.
All right.
Next party, the Youth International Party. Anti-government counterculture movements were the face of the radical left during the 1960s, fueled by societal upheavals and anti-war sentiment. Counterculture groups attempted to bring about important changes in the world around them. One of the strongest groups was the Youth International Party, also known as the Yippies, a far-left organization of young political demonstrators that became an American third party. The Yippies held the hallmark beliefs of 1960s counterculture. They advocated looser restrictions on drugs, strict anti-war policies. Yippies were unique in the way they broadcast their message. They participated in street art, counterculture performances, and mischievous pranks.
This is like, imagine TPing someone's house and just being like, this is for anti-war. And it's just like some random person that you don't know.
This reminds me of a time I went to go see the Rolling Stones. It was one of those, it's like in 2003, it was one of those old school like concert things where it was all general admission. It was a small venue. So I stood in line for 10 hours to make sure I could get in like front, right on top of the stage, as I did. This guy came up to me and my roommate at the time, and he's like, "Do you guys want to buy some art?" And we're like, "What?" He's like, "Here's a brochure of all the art we do." I'm like, "We? Who's we?" He's like, "We're part of this group in North Carolina and we make art." I'm like, "Oh, what do you make art for?" He's like, "We make art to stop war." So I think he was a Yippie.
Probably.
And he stop war and to create a world that doesn't stink. Those were his exact words. And then my roommate responded, "My life's pretty good. I'm eating tacos right now. I'm about to see the Rolling Stones." He got really mad at us.
Honestly, your roommate has his priorities.
Yes, he's like, "It doesn't get much better than this." And the guy's like, "Whoa." And he just went down the line trying to sell his art. But maybe he was a Yippie.
Maybe.
Yippie! Or although the Yippies did not run real political candidates for office, their theatrics influenced U.S. politicians and citizens of the time. Their biggest moment came during the 1968 Chicago Democratic Convention, when Yippies spread rumors that they had laced the Chicago water system with LSD. They also nominated a pig named Pigasus as their presidential candidate. Following a riot, it was more than a riot, yes. If you know anything about the 1968 Democratic National Convention, massive riots.
I haven't gotten there in a
minute. Oh, it's bad scene.
All right.
Yeah. The police arrested Yippie leaders. Although they were put on trial, the Yippies didn't stop their antics. The group died out in the 1970s as the counterculture movement lost steam. As a result, Pegasus never got to sit in the White House.
No. Oh, man.
My dad has an opinion on why the counterculture movement died out. Mm. He said it's because they had to get jobs. That's his opinion. He's like, you can't do like all this like communal stuff because it doesn't pay the bills. So then you have to go get jobs and that kind of.
All right.
Yeah, that's what he says. But anyway, which one's this? The Proletarian Party of America. Oh no. Oh,
I wonder what this is.
Yeah, like. I wonder what they lean towards. The USA had a variety of socialist and communist political parties during its history. The Proletarian Party of America, PPA, emerged from the better-known Communist Party USA. Sounds like a horrible rock song.
Communist Party in USA.
Oh, we should make bad history songs.
We should
make bad history songs.
I don't know how to play like any instruments.
That I could crudely like, play the guitar. So
I can kind of.
Aren't you in band?
Yeah, but I don't play guitar. I play euphonium, which is like not a rock instrument.
Oh, we can make it one.
Maybe.
Come on.
Yeah. Doesn't really. Maybe.
All right. So the PPA formed a smaller socialist party in Detroit after World War I. PPA leaders attempted to ally with the Communist Party, but the two parties disagreed on key issues, especially the method which a communist revolution should occur. While the Communist Party followed a more revolutionary concept of Marxism, the PPA focused on educating the masses. The PPA believed that communism would only take hold in the U.S. if workers were sufficiently educated about the tenets of communism, after which they would decide for themselves to undertake a communist revolution. From the start, the PPA suffered internal schisms and disagreements. Most party members stubbornly refused to align with other American communist parties. This distanced the PPA from the mainstream of American communism. Even so, the PPA survived well into the 1970s, but they eventually fell apart when their party leader died. And he was like the only one.
So, like, there wasn't anyone else.
I see.
Entire party.
Nope. He was like last one left. I see a real big flaw in their method of spreading communism. Typically, you don't want to educate people on communism to help it spread because then people understand how dumb it is.
Yeah.
That's why they always, whenever you see a communist revolution, one of the first things they do is kill all the educated people.
Yeah, like in
Cuba,
China,
Soviet Union, China, Vietnam,
North Korea,
Cambodia, Laos,
pretty much everywhere.
Everywhere else, yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah.
Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Yep. Because most people who are educated realize it's stupid and it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's why they have no econ teachers there.
Do they have any teachers in North Korea? Except Kim Jong-un teachers?
I know there's a university.
Oh, I could.
Because Kim Jong-un apparently graduated top of his class from there.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. It's also like a military school, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Apparently they've run out of ammunition.
North Korea?
Yeah, they were giving it all their stuff to Russia.
Huh.
And apparently they're out.
You know it's bad when you have to rely on North Korea to give you stuff.
Correct. And most of their stuff probably came from Russia in the first place, yeah, like exactly. Back in the 1960s.
Yeah.
New Party. Now defunct, New Party was a moderately successful political party that ran on the platform of reinventing the electoral process.
Wait, it's called the New Party?
It's called the New Party. New Party politicians believed that U.S. voting system heavily favored the two major parties and not give third parties a reasonable chance to have their candidates win elective offices. They're not wrong there. To combat this, New Party leaders proposed that the U.S. engage in electoral fusion, in which a candidate could run on the ticket of more than one party. Total votes across parties would then be counted for the politician. This was expected to give third parties more representation in the United States and increase voter participation. The New Party strategy was to get as many candidates into the public spotlight as possible. In addition to electoral fusion, the party endorsed mainstream progressive politics and often placed Democratic candidates on their ballots. New Party also introduced the idea of candidate contracts. If a candidate wished to get a New Party endorsement, they would sign a legally binding contract, agreeing to uphold the values and ideas that they espoused when they received the endorsement. Throughout the mid-1990s, the New Party was mildly successful, but they did not have enough influence to make a huge difference on the political scene and died out before the turn of the 21st century. Oddly, New Party ideals still may be influential today. During Barack Obama's first run for Senate, he signed a New Party voter contract and may have joined the party briefly to give himself an edge in the election.
All right.
Got one more. The American Vegetarian Party.
Oh, no.
Or AVP.
This is... Oh, man.
Wow, they formed in 1947.
Really?
Expecting a lot later than that. They ran a presidential candidate in 1948 and continued to do so until the party died out. Throughout its history, the AVP championed progressive ideas of times, including equal rights. Of course, the AVP focused on ending meat consumption in the U.S., but also favored strict control of alcohol and tobacco. Party officials were concerned about the overuse of medicine, too. Oh, no.
So it's just prohibition, but with meat also.
Uh-huh. 1948, they ran an 85-year-old candidate named Dr. John Maxwell, but they didn't really get any votes.
I wonder why.
They continued to run candidates, but... No one really supported them.
Yeah, I can definitely see why.
Some people have tried to revitalize the AVP as a political party, but their efforts are also unsuccessful. There you go, AVP.
All right. That sounds terrible.
I don't think anyone would vote for them.
Yeah, no.
Nope.
Except maybe like hardcore vegetarian.
Like I understand. All right, you choose to be a vegetarian. All right, that's your choice.
But you don't have
more power to you. But when you start saying I'm going to take away your meat and your alcohol, I think most Americans will have problems with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
There would be then the raw meat economy would explode though, because that's what happened when Prohibition happened. Like the alcohol, like. Everybody started buying it.
There's going to be bootleg meat dealer. All right. So those are the some of the strange political parties.
Yep.
I wonder why none of them really took power in anything.
I think we know why, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Maybe we'll get a strange one come up in here in 2024.
Maybe. You never know.
I will check the ballots by state and see if we have any third party candidates that.
Maybe the rent is too high party. It will be on there.
I think they're done too.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, dang. That was a good one. That was for New York state elections.
Ah, all right.
I think it was for New York City's particular. I forgot the guy's name, but he wore gloves and he had very nice facial hair because the rent is too dang high, as he would say on everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, thank you for listening.